Welcome to City Club of Eugene's January 4th program, From Eugene to Salem, a conversation with Oregon Chief Justice Martha Walters. This is the 15th program of the 2018-2019 programming year. I'm Joel Curran, President of City Club. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member or a sponsor at cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors. Our diamond sponsors are Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente caters to high-quality medical, affordable health care services to improve the health of the members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. The University of Oregon. Since 1876, the UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, and communicate, better than I am, communicate clearly, act creatively, and ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Better clean that up before President Schill comes next week. And our Sapphire sponsor, Summit Bank. Summit Bank has support for City Club. And Summit Bank is your local community bank, an independent community bank headquartered in Eugene, and it serves the business and professional communities in Eugene, Springfield, and if you read today's paper, now in Portland. 50 years ago this month, I transferred into Rutgers Law School in Camden and joined a class of 41 men and one woman. When I graduated and became a lawyer in Camden County, one of the larger counties in New Jersey, there were no women on the bench and very few women in the Bar Association. Now, when I taught at Rutgers for a period of time, and by 2011, when I retired, more than half of my class were women law students getting ready to take the bar exam and become lawyers. In Oregon, there are many women in the bar and on the bench. When I started in 1971 as a lawyer, none of the justices of the New Jersey Supreme Court were women. Very few women were in the bar. Now we've come a long way, and five of the seven members of the Oregon Supreme Court are women, three of the seven members of the New Jersey Supreme Court are women, and three of the nine members of the United States Supreme Court are women. Does that make a difference? Whether you're a man or a woman judge, the work of the court continues and goes on, and you're trying to solve the same questions. We're honored to have with us today, the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, Eugene's own Martha Walters, the first woman to become the Chief Justice. Oregon has somewhat of a different rule or different method of selecting a Chief Justice. In many states, the Chief Justice is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. In some states, it's a question of seniority, where the longest-serving justice becomes Chief Justice. In Oregon, the Chief Justice is selected by the other justices, and Chief Justice Walters was selected by a unanimous vote of the other justices of the Supreme Court to serve a six-year term. After graduating from the University of Oregon Law School in 1977, Chief Justice Walters worked as a trial lawyer. And as she told the Local Government Affairs Council of the Chamber of Commerce this morning, she was responsible for payroll, she was responsible for paying the bills, and she was responsible for all the things that a small business has to do, a small practice has to do, in addition to trying cases. She was part of a team that represented Casey Martin, who was disabled. Case went to the Supreme Court, and he was allowed to use a golf cart instead of walking because of his disability. She served on many various committees with the County and State Bar Association. She served as a commissioner, National Commission for Uniform State Laws, a group that attempts to determine common problems within the states and find solutions for those problems, then to be adopted by the various state legislators. She was a member of the prestigious American College of Trial Lawyers and appointed to the Supreme Court in 2006. Judge Suzanne Chianti, who now refers to Chief Justice Walters as Chief, used to call her Cheese when they were practicing together back in here in Eugene. Judge Chianti earned her JD degree at the U of O, and prior to going on the bench, she was a partner with Chief Justice Walters from 1992 to 2006 in the practice of law, trying discrimination cases and other types of cases dealing with disability. She also serves in the disability community and serves on the board of directors of Eugene Ballet and Lane County Public Defenders. We had a choice today of either a complete introduction or a program. And given the length of the resumes of these two judges, we decided to go with the program. So I now invite Judge Chianti and Chief Justice Walters to the front.
Arthur and I tend to get very involved in our conversation, so we'll try to keep it short, but you'll have to forgive us. There's a danger to this kind of presentation, which is we might just get into our own conversation and not realize that time is going by. And the other side is we might not cover the things that you want to hear, but fortunately you'll have some question time, so if we don't get to what you're interested in, you can ask her. All right, so let's start with a softball. You graduated from the University of Michigan. You lived in Michigan your whole life. Did you come to the University of Oregon because of the University Law School?
No, I came for adventure. It was the early 70s, and I wanted to see what was out in the world, and I had an idea that what was important, and I still have the same idea, is kids. That I studied sociology in undergrad, and I wanted to work in daycare, thinking that if we raise our kids right, we'll have a better world. And so that's what I did. I set up a tent in a Armitage State Park and looked in the newspaper for jobs and a place to rent for $35 a month, and started working in daycare. And it was terrific. It was the best decision, maybe other than the person I married, that I've made in my life, was to move to Oregon and settle here. And I wouldn't have applied for law school anywhere else. I only applied at University of Oregon because I wanted to stay here.
Why did you decide you wanted to be a lawyer?
Well, I thought, I had this idea that in daycare, there wasn't something concrete that I could tell people. You know, I could suggest this and hope for that, but I thought maybe the law, I could have something where there was an answer, and also that I would understand our society more broadly, how everything fit together. Well, I did get to learn a lot about how our society and our system of justice works, but on the other hand, I learned that there are arguments this way and arguments that way, and it's the law, there's a lot of the law can be interpreted in various ways, and there isn't necessarily always one answer.
All right, so we were together in our firm for 18 years. We probably could spend the whole time just talking about that, but why don't you just tell people a little bit about what our firm was and what you learned from all those years? In 2 sentences or less.
Our firm, well, when we first started, there were three women who formed this firm, and it was one of the first all-women firms in the state. And we became very close friends and raised our children together as well as took on our cases. And we were extremely fortunate that we got to take on the cases that mattered to us and that mattered to the people that brought them forward. We later expanded our firm and added other partners and lifelong friends to work with us. So we had at various times 5 to 10 people working with us and wonderful staff. But to give an example of the kind of thing that we took on, Joel mentioned the Casey Martin case, and it's just an example of the kind of thing that we were able to do, where an individual person felt wronged, and we provided an opportunity for that person to stand up and say, "This was wrong. Will you help me do something about it?" And so we were able to give people a voice, whether it was in a discrimination case, whether it was in a family law case, which is where someone needed someone to speak for them. And so, one of the things I learned, and hopefully you'll chime in on this a little bit, is how important it is that people have access to justice. You know, for people to be able to have a place to go where they can say, "This was wrong." The PGA is a huge corporation. You know, what is Casey Martin supposed to do when he's not able to play golf on the PGA Tour? That's the only place you can play professionally. And he asked to be able to play. He needed a golf cart to do it. They said no. He could either just accept that, or he could go to a place where there was somebody who could represent him and file a piece of paper in the court, and the PGA would have to listen, and they would have to come to court and explain why they weren't allowing him to have a golf cart, and we would have a law that permitted him to voice his objections, and we could help him find a remedy for that. So it was terrific.
All right. Now, why did you decide you wanted to go to the Supreme Court, since that was such a great job?
You've been asking me that a lot over
time.
Yeah,
for 12 years.
I don't really know. At that time, there had been women on the Oregon Supreme Court before I was on the court. Betty Roberts was our first woman Chief Justice, and then we had a couple other women, but in the time period before I went.
Justice, she wasn't the Chief.
She wasn't the Chief. She was at first Justice on the Oregon Supreme Court. Thank you, John. Thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah, nothing like your friends and husband.
And so for 5 years, there hadn't been any women on there. It was all men. And this was in the early 2000s, because I went on the court in 2006. So we really did need to have a woman on our court. It's very important to have diversity. We also didn't have anybody from downstate at that time. And we also didn't have anybody, the person who was retiring before he had gone on the court had represented individuals, but the other people on the court had not. They had been in government practice or representing businesses before they went on, and we represented businesses too, but I thought it was important that the court have that diversity, and I thought it would be interesting to, again, try to see the system more broadly, to try to understand other aspects of our system of justice.
All right, so I'm not sure, there's a lot of lawyers in the room, but could you just describe the difference between the trial court, the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court?
Well, when I was a lawyer, I was obviously working in the trial courts, and that's where you get decisions by a judge or a jury about your case. If there is an objection to how the law was applied in the trial courts, that goes to our Court of Appeals. And those appeals the Court of Appeals must take all the cases that are filed with the Court of Appeals and decide them. So that's where corrections are made, can be made to trial court decisions. After that, people don't have a right to appeal. They can petition for review. It's like in the United States Supreme Court where you seek a writ of certiorari, but in Oregon we call it a petition for review. So in Oregon, our court decides one of the jobs we have is to decide whether to take a petition for review, and we take about 7 to 9% of the petitions that are filed with us, and then we've already got the decision of the Court of Appeals to help us, and we can more deeply study the issues that come to us. We issue about 70 opinions a year.
How do you decide what kind of cases to grant petition for?
We take the cases that have broader applicability to than just the people that who come before them. So for instance, we had a case about private computers and whether in a criminal case a victim's computer could be searched for evidence of the crime. The victim said that she was assaulted, and there was an allegation that the that she had, on the night after the assault, she had looked up on her computer, what is rape? And the defendant thought that that was evidence that would be important for the jury to know, and she didn't want her computer searched. Well, how, if you allow the search, how broad a search do you allow on that computer? How can you narrow a search like you do with a search warrant to search a house? You can say, you know, search in places where the marijuana plant can be found. But on a computer where that evidence can be found could be all over the computer, and how do we describe that in a way that is sufficiently narrow to protect the interests of people in their right to privacy? So that kind of a case, it's not just only important for those people in that particular case, it's important generally to people that right to privacy. So that'd be the kind of case that we would take.
All right, now you've been the chief since what, July?
Yes.
And how is your job different from, you're still a justice, you still write opinions, participate in the decisions, but what are your additional duties now that you're the chief justice?
The Chief Justice is the administrative head of all of the courts in Oregon. So I listen to cases that are argued to us, and like Suzanne said, I write opinions, I assign opinions out, but I also am responsible for our entire branch, and that's 37 judicial districts, about 200 judges, about 1,500 employees around the state. We're a unified court system. And I think you heard in the introduction about how our chief is elected. This only came up in 1981, where we made a unified system with a chief that the legislature decided would be, or actually it was the people that decided that the legislature decided it should be the governor that appointed the chief, and it was referred to the people to decide that it should be the court. So it's a really, really different job to be, along with our state court administrator and the people who work for the courts, responsible for all those people and that entire operation. And it gives me much more chance to go back and be involved in the trial courts like I was when I was a lawyer and advocate for the courts and understand the problems that they face. And Judge Shanti is a really good, can, maybe you could tell everybody the kind of things that come up for judges around the state where the chief is involved in the issues that come up for you.
Well, the issues that come up for us, of course, are how can we do our job? What do we need to do the job well? And Martha is our person that we go to communicate that to the legislature. Because without resources, if we're short staffed, for instance, there's not enough people to handle the cases that come in. If we don't have the family assistance office open, then all the people that come in that don't have lawyers that need help with their domestic relations cases can't get help from our court. And like, what paperwork do I file? How do I file this? How do I get this done? And so we, the judges online, see that, and then hopefully we can communicate that through our presiding judge and through our court administrator what our needs are, and then Martha's charged with the duty of going out there and making the case for us.
And we can, as the state court, we can see that there's training for the judges around the state. If there's a good idea that Lane County has about how to operate a problem-solving court, that can be communicated to us. We can make that known to other courts so that we can work as a whole to provide justice for everyone in the state. If people are finding issues with mental health, which maybe you could talk a little bit about that and how we get involved in that task force.
This is an example of what the justice system does that maybe people don't understand or recognize, because it's more than just resolving the individual disputes or the individual cases. There's a problem in our community all across the state with people that have mental illness intersecting with the criminal justice system. I have yet to meet a judge that thinks that the best thing to do with someone mentally ill is to send them to prison or cycle them through the jail. But we have to figure out how to solve that problem. And so the legislature in Oregon right now has taken a hold of that and said, yeah, we are going to try to solve this problem. They reached out to Martha, who then appointed two of us, two judges, me and Nan Waller from Multnomah County, to participate in this steering committee to try to figure out how can we solve the problem. How can the court system, the legislature, community partners address the issue of mentally ill people and their criminal behaviors, a lot of which is caused by the lack of community support, the lack of housing, the lack of treatment, the lack of medication management, all of those things intersecting. And so that's part of what our justice system does under the leadership of Chief Justice Walters. All right, so let's move to the next thing that I want to talk about is, what is there something that since you've been chief you found out about our judicial system that you didn't fully understand or that's surprising to you?
I think one thing that I didn't understand is really how vulnerable our system is. You know, you grow up thinking that we have three branches of government, we've got courts that are operating, and there will be justice dispensed and hopefully justice for all. And I realize that we're really holding that in our hands, and unless we're real careful and nurture it and make it breathe and live, it's nothing. It's words on the paper. Yes, we have a constitution. It has words on that paper, but if there are not judges who can listen, if we don't treat people with respect and dignity, if people don't believe in our system, if they don't believe in our system, it's not, it's just those words on the paper. And so there's a lot of responsibility that we have to give life to that system. And the number of people who are involved in doing that are hugely important, from law enforcement to people in the treatment courts, to people bringing the jurors in, to the jurors themselves, to the people who come and testify in the courts. The integrity of the whole thing has to hold for it to work. And that's why I'm so glad to have an opportunity to come here. I know there's a lot of people who are friends of mine who I've known for years, who I've talked to about this, but these are not my courts or our trial courts, or they're our courts. They're our community courts, and we've got to care for them and nurture them and make them live.
And along that line, the idea of keeping the integrity of the court system, some people frequently bring up the issue of judicial independence. What do you think about the need or the vulnerability of judicial independence?
It's obviously so key, because people who come before our courts want a neutral decision maker. It matters so much to them to be heard by someone who hasn't prejudged them. So it's important to the people who come to our courts to feel that they're going to get that fair, impartial treatment. And so when we take our oath of office, obviously that's one thing that we're pledging to do, to be that neutral person. But You know that there are pressures. We've got a legislature that funds our courts. You know, we have to be cognizant. Are we going to feel pressure from that or from anybody in power to decide in a certain way? Are we going to be able to just take the law and follow the rule of law? And it's just something we've got to be cognizant of. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think what you said is exactly right. Of course.
I think that in Oregon, we're very lucky. We see these issues coming up in other states where judges have been recalled for political reasons, or campaigns have been run with political on political terms, and we haven't had that yet in Oregon. And so that's another thing we've got to hold fast to and try to have our elections. We're appointed. If there's a vacancy on our court, we can be appointed to that vacancy. Judge Shanti and I were both appointed at various times, and then we had to run in the next election after that. So there are elections every 6 years of judges, and it's important that those be conducted on a merits-based system.
All right, and what is it that you would like people to know about our judicial branch of government that maybe they don't fully understand?
I guess the degree to which we're not silos. Like, our courts are able to, our trial courts particularly on the front lines, they see all the problems, like Judge Shanti explained, that we're facing. We can provide information to the legislature. We can help the legislature to write laws. Those laws are going to be executed by the executive branch. We all work together in partnership. All of you see problems with the judicial system, or you see its benefits. We need to hear from you. We need to all work together as communities, figuring out our different roles, but not be in silos. See us as not up here sitting alone deciding, but us being part of a system of justice that's important that it work for everyone.
So this morning this isn't on my list, but this morning we went to the Chamber of Commerce, a subcommittee, and we had a little bit of a discussion, and I was really struck by the conversation about the importance of the justice system, not just to the users that come into the courthouse with their problems, which is a big part of what the court system does, help resolve individual cases, but also the discussion about the importance of the justice system to our democracy, little d, as a whole. And we had that robust kind of discussion about the importance of the system to hold power accountable and make sure that power doesn't get abused, and the need for the people to believe that that system is there and they can trust us. Could you comment on that a little bit?
Well, just that it almost seems like saying it over again, but when we can have judges who can sit and really look the person in the eye and take the time and listen, the result reached isn't going to matter as much as the fact that there was respect paid, time taken. People are cynical about our government generally, and the courts are a place, I think, if we can provide access to those courts, and that's a sort of another topic, but when people do have access, when they can get into the courts and feel heard, then they believe not only in the courts, but I think they believe in the whole government, that government is available to them, that government in some ways works. And that's why it's so important, not just to the courts, but to our whole democracy, to have the time and the right people and do the listening.
You want to talk about the things that the judicial department or branch of government has done recently to try to improve access to justice?
Well, we're obviously working very hard. We very much support legal aid and trying to have people have lawyers to come into our courtrooms. But there are so many people who aren't represented who come into our courtrooms. So we've got systems. You mentioned the family facilitation. where we've got people in the courtrooms that can, or in the courthouses that can try to shepherd people through and at least tell them how things work. So we're trying to work, both trying to get lawyers for people and trying to have unrepresented people be able to find their way. We also have put into place, we call it eCourt. It's an electronic system for filing documents, for paying obligations imposed by the court, for getting access to legal documents online. And so those can now be obtained statewide, and we're very proud of our courts for having done that project on time, within budget, and we think we're the first state IT project to have done that. So we feel good about that. We feel like our courts really are, the funding for our courts is less than 3% of the general fund. So we feel like our courts, your courts, do so much for so little, and we feel like we can do more, and we're always wanting your ideas for how to do better.
You heard the Chief Justice talk about going to law school as the second best thing she did compared to the gentleman she married, who happens to be a City Club member, John Van Landingham, and who is also a lawyer fighting for housing, and the first and chief winner of the Turtle Award. He is the Turtle Wrangler. We'll now break for 5 minutes for table discussion and formulation of questions. Questions can only be asked by City Club members, but all people can participate in the discussion. So we'll take 5 minutes now and break. Thank you.
Good evening. You're listening to City Club of Eugene on KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. You can find all City Club of Eugene programs on our website, klcc.org.
To thank radio station KLCC for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. and Community Television of Lane County, cable channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. And our gold sponsors, AARP of Oregon, Emergency Veterinary Hospital, Homes for Good, Sacred Earth Botanicals, and special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM, Dot Dotson Photography, and PacInfo, Simplified Computing, LLC. Before we start questions, Chief Justice Walters would like to recognize some people in the room.
I hope it was implicit in what I said, but one of the things I've learned as a chief is how hard our trial courts work and what a fabulous job they do. And so I just wanted to recognize the Lane County Trial Court Administrator, Liz Rambo, is here, and our presiding judge, Judge Vogt, and many of the other judges from our court. Would you please stand so we can thank them for their work?
And serving as a CASA, I've appeared before many of them, and they do a good job. Ralph?
I'm Ralph Pledger. I've been a member of City Club for about 3 years, and I'm asking a question for a guest. Could you explain the rationale or the law that keeps the Juliana versus government case on hold?
I've got an idea who might be asking that. I know people have asked me this before, and I do not know the answer to that. It's happening in the federal courts, and that sometimes it takes a long time to have decisions be made, and we have stays in the proceedings in order to allow those decisions to be made, and that's about as much as I know. Sorry.
Very diplomatic.
Hi, Dave Fidanke, longtime City Club member, and formerly with the ACLU before I retired. And I should say both of these judges up here at one point were volunteer cooperating attorneys for the ACLU, of which I'm very proud. The question I have for the Chief Justice has to do with the Oregon Constitution. You mentioned a case earlier in your talk about a victim of a crime whose the defendant in that, criminal defendant in that case, wanted to get access to the victim's computer. Could you give us an update on that case and where it's at this point, but also talk about the Oregon Constitution and where the court might, in your view, the Oregon Supreme Court might be headed in terms of its interpretation of those rights that are unique in Oregon or have been interpreted differently from the federal constitution, like the right against unreasonable searches or seizures. Are those rights still important to this Oregon Supreme Court?
thank you, Mr. Podanky. It is very important to recognize that we have our own Oregon Constitution as well as the federal Constitution. So we can interpret our Constitution differently than the federal Constitution, and we have at times, and we do have a right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure in our Oregon Constitution as they do in the federal Constitution. But these issues of, you might have seen a federal case about the federal Constitution on the search of cell phones, and ours is similar, where all, both of the federal courts and the Oregon courts are struggling with these issues of how do you treat something where you may have all the information that's important in your life in one place and keep those issues private. We do have a commitment to interpreting our Constitution in a way that we think is correct, regardless of whether we're in agreement with the federal Constitution on that. On search and seizure, there are a number of places where it's a little bit different. It'd be too long for me to try to explain all the differences, but there are differences, and we will continue to hold to those to the extent that we're reasonably interpreting our Constitution. This case of State versus Bray is a case that our court did already decide. We decided that there was a right to look at this computer, but only for information that the police had probable cause to believe was on the computer. And we sent it back to the trial court for the trial court to decide how to conduct that inquiry. They will have to use some kind of an expert on computer inquiries and try to limit the inquiry appropriately to find the information that they had probable cause to believe was on the computer.
Hello, thank you. Doug Bovee, City Club. Couple quickies here. How are judge elections merit-based? I heard that and surprised by that. And how do we voters determine the nominee's merits?
Thank you, Mr. Moby. Well, they're merit-based just because you're deciding on the merits of the judge, and it is up to the people to decide. We do try to provide information in the voter's pamphlet to give you some help, but you're right. When the criteria that we're looking for in a judge are impartiality, judgment, care about the community, those are hard things to you can't give a score on those kinds of things or measure them with statistics. So they're kind of hard things for the public to know about, and we struggle with that, how to educate the public to know how to pick a good judge.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. I've been struggling with the preamble to the U.S. Constitution. It lays out the purposes of government, and one of them is welfare. And I'm finding, through my life as a social worker, I've seen people cared for, and now I'm seeing people on the street pushing themselves in wheelchairs, with walkers, with no place to stay. We have a system, but it hasn't taken care of them. And what can you do to push the state and the federal to do what they need to do in order to come up with like payments or rent or something for people that are on the streets and homeless?
Thank you. We can't create law, we can interpret law, and like you say, there may be provisions in the Constitution or provisions of Oregon law that if someone brings us a case, we can interpret those laws in a way to promote the public welfare, but we can't make decrees without a case that comes in front of us. It's interesting that there was a case, was it out of Idaho, John, that where the court was asked about people who are homeless being fined or subject to criminal penalty for being in parks without a place to live. And the court said, you can't punish people for being homeless if you're not providing housing as a government for them. And so that's an instance in which a court was able to rule on an issue like the ones that you're concerned about.
Mary?
This actually is a follow-up to that one. This, it comes about on the same kind of case here. What are the remedies for a situation where enforcing the law seems a bad idea or unjust? Or what remedies do you wish there were? If you were in charge of the Constitution, what would you fix to make it, you know,
all where, right? Where the law is unjust.
Yeah.
We have, it's the one thing that we have in our Oregon Constitution is a proportionality clause, cruel and unusual punishment. The punishment has to be proportional to the crime. And in very rare circumstances, we've been able to say that the particular punishment was not proportional to the crime and strike it down as unconstitutional. Generally, our trial court judges don't have as much discretion as I think that they would like. I don't know, you want to talk about that a second, Suzanne?
I would always like more discretion. It's, with all seriousness, my highest duty is to interpret the law whether I like it or not. Because if we have judges that decide cases based on their personal preference, their political view, or something like that, we don't have a country based on the rule of law. So it's unfortunate because sometimes it's heartbreaking what I decide based on what I think the law is. And the answer to that is it's the people that need to change the law. You know, I can give voice to that. I can let the legislature, through Justice Walters or other people, know that this might be a problem. But it's also the citizenry that has to pay attention and let their legislators know that this is a problem so that the law can get changed. Because I can't ignore the law and I can't impose decisions based on what I think would be best. If I did that, I'd be violating the oath of office that I took.
Judge Chanti, could you give some examples of where you would like more discretion or where following the law seemed to end up in an unjust result?
Well, because I've on this task force about mental illness, I could tell you that if I sentence someone who's mentally ill to a crime, they might not qualify or their lawyer has not proffered a guilty except insanity defense. But I can tell, either by what I've been told or just my observations, that the person has a mental health problem. And in a stereotypical situation, they're not all this way, but the person might be homeless. The person might have been arrested for criminal trespass, and then maybe at the time that they're being arrested, they end up assaulting a police officer, all fueled by a mental illness. I don't get to say, hey, no, I'm not going to agree to this sentence if it was negotiated, or you shouldn't, to the DA, you shouldn't have charged this. And I'm not even saying the DA shouldn't have charged that. I mean, it's a public, it's a complicated issue. We've got someone acting out who's mentally ill. The public needs to stay safe. But my discretion would be, wow, wouldn't it be great to have a program where we could divert those people, either pre-charge or post-charge, so that they could get the help they need, the housing they need, and then they won't recycle back into the system. So that's some area of discretion. There's other discretions, like we have Measure 11, which is an automatic sentence. If you commit a crime under the Measure 11, one of the crimes under that law, we have to impose a sentence generally, and it's day for day. They have to stay in prison that whole time, and we don't get to say, well, in this case, we don't think it should be 75 months. We think it should be something less than that, or some other kind of aberration from what the legislature has said. So I would prefer to have more discussion about that, because I don't think, just because they commit the same crime, that every defendant is in the same category of danger to the community.
Bob?
Cassidy, City Club member. There's some talk about our Supreme Court becoming politicized. What protections do we have that this court will not go in that direction? What things are done to make sure that doesn't happen?
Thank you, Mr. Cassidy. That's an important concern, that courts not be politicized. For one thing that makes it less likely here is the kinds of issues that come to our court are not the same type of issues that come to the United States Supreme Court. Most of the time we're interpreting statutes that our Oregon legislature has written, and we're trying to decide what does it mean when does this type of action that was taken when somebody takes blue jeans off of a shelf and returns them for money, is that assault one or assault theft one or theft four? Is that theft by receiving or just plain old theft? And so we're trying to decide questions like that that don't raise the kind of political issue that others do. But we try to just, and one thing that we can do, I think, and I don't know exactly how to do this, I'd be looking for your ideas, is try to explain our decisions, let you know more the kinds of things that are coming to our court. There, if people understood really the kinds of issues that come before us and the kind of rules that we're bound by and the kind of how we approach our cases, they would see that we're trying to apply a rule of law and rules of interpreting the law that don't have anything to do with our political views. So maybe one thing we can do is just come to places like this or talk more broadly with the press so that people understand the rule of law that we're deciding.
I'm going to chime in there just because we talked about it this morning, and there's a synergy between the community, the citizenry, and the judiciary, right? So the judiciary, we could reach out more so that people understand what we're doing and the import of what we're doing, because probably the majority of people don't even think about the judiciary. They don't have cases that, unless they're getting divorced or they're probating a case or maybe they have a traffic ticket, most people don't frequent where we our work. If we did some outreach to the community so they understood the broader issues that are involved in having a robust judiciary that's strong and can allocate responsibilities and be a check on abuses of power, then perhaps we'd have more citizen involvement, and it's the citizens that are going to have to keep us from being politicized, right? We can't do it. We run for election, the citizens are the ones that are going to have to say, you know, we're not going to have someone from out of state come in or issue people of certain issues trying to interfere with our elections or make it a single issue thing, because we do understand the importance of the judiciary in a broader way as opposed to a single issue. And so I think there's a synergy between the judiciary and what Justice Walters is doing. She's doing a really good job of going out into the community and talking to the community about our judicial branch of government, but it's also the obligation of the citizens, like the people that are here, to care about and protect us. We can't always protect ourselves.
Ma'am? I'm Edith Roberts with City Club. The Oregon Constitution supports having a healthy environment. How can the law be used to support climate issues when they conflict with economic interests? And can you say anything about the Our Children's Trust lawsuit?
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. I don't know specifically what provision of the Oregon Constitution you're thinking about that protects the environment. and we haven't been brought a case in our Oregon courts, as far as I understand, trying to make that argument about the Oregon Constitution. When a case comes before us, we'll have to take a look at issues like that. And the Oregon Children's Trust case is being tried in the federal courts, and I think that that's where it's going to be decided. We won't really get to comment on it.
Can I have to ask a follow-up? Has the public trust doctrine been recognized in Oregon?
Not in the way it's being presented. Everybody knows about the beach bill, our Oregon right to walk along the beaches in Oregon, and that's something similar, but I just don't know how similar.
Okay. Paul? Folks, we have time for more questions, so feel free. Otherwise, I'll ask the questions.
Yeah, I'm Paul Thompson, the City Club member on and off since 2003. Our table thought one of the statistics that you tossed out was kind of astounding, and that was the 7 to 9% of the petitions that are accepted. Could you elaborate on that a little bit as to why there's over 90% of the ones that are not meritorious enough to be able to be accepted? And is it just that lawyers are over petitioning, or what's happening there?
That's a very good question, thank you. We will take review of any case that seems to us to have these broader implications and to need to be decided. Don't forget that we already have a Court of Appeals decision in a case, and it may be very well written and very well reasoned, and it may be right. And so there's not a reason for us to take that, to look at it, to say they were right in a lot of instances. So we're looking for something where there's something that we can add to what the Court of Appeals has already said. Also, we get a lot of criminal appeals because they have to exhaust their remedies in state court before they go to federal court. And so in a number of those, they're routinely coming to us for review because they have to, and not really expecting that we're going to be granting review.
And let me ask a follow-up. The appeals court has three judges on the panels?
Three judge panels, yes.
Are you required to take cases where there is a dissent?
No.
Okay.
But we often will. If there's a split on the Court of Appeals, and they have three judge panels, but they've got 13 members on their court, and sometimes they'll take a case to full court, and sometimes there'll be a 7-6 decision on their court. And so we can see that there's two different ways of looking at things, and might be helpful for us to chime in.
Majeska C. Screen, former and future member of City Club.
Thank you.
The issue of panhandling is a very controversial issue in Eugene and many other cities in Oregon. And I understand that there's something about how the Oregon Constitution has been interpreted that really impacts what communities can do about panhandling. And if you could address that and help clarify that issue.
I'm not sure I understand. Is Dave Fidenke still here? Yeah, it may be something about the right to freedom of speech, because our Oregon Constitution protects people's right of freedom of speech, and there might be some thing that some people would call panhandling and others might call freedom of speech.
There's time for questions, folks, but let me ask one or two. There was some discussion of merit selection of judges. Would you describe the application process? What questions are on the application that judges file to ask the governor to consider selecting them?
Yeah, I was going to say, that was 12 years ago, but I think they may mainly ask about your legal experience, what kind of cases have you handled, how many appeals have you done, how many trials have you done, on the questionnaire. And then you go through a process where the Bar Association will question you about your whether they think you'll make a good judge, and so will the governor.
Does the Bar Association rate the judges as qualified?
We don't rate it.
They don't rate, okay.
Mm-hmm. My name is Carolyn Miller. I'm Springfield City Club board member. I'm always a little bit confused about the Disabilities Act, in the sense that if I'm in a wheelchair, ramps must be built. But if I'm mentally ill, there isn't enough facilities for me to be treated. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me as though that's a disability that's set apart in some way that I don't really understand.
Mm-hmm. Good question. Thank you for raising it. Certainly, mental illness is considered a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and Oregon also has its own disability. Yes. Oh, no. Okay. It's not what? And so there do have to be reasonable accommodations made. So it's a question whether building a facility is a way of providing a reasonable accommodation. And like you say, a ramp is a way of getting in to somewhere, and that has to be built. So why couldn't we use that same idea of saying people, the only way for people with mental disabilities to access certain things is to get some treatment for them? It's an interesting idea. I don't think it's been brought up in that way. It's be a question whether that's reasonable to require the levying of those resources for that purpose.
Lee?
What do you think that's?
Lee Lashway, City Club member. You mentioned 3% of the general fund budget goes to the judicial department. Could you flesh out a little bit, like you did earlier this morning, about what you do with that money so people have a sense for the shortfall and the struggle that the judicial branch has?
Yeah, that's thank you. I am really concerned about the resources for our courts. I think that trial judges are better able to sort of tell you day to day all the things that they undertake. But we have 500,000 cases filed in our state every year, $800 million in conservatorship assets that we're managing, 12,000 open child dependency cases. The amount of effort, time, resources devoted to children with needs in our state is just huge. We have treatment courts that require so much time and energy to take people who have had veterans, people with mental illness, people with addiction, and try to break those cycles and help them learn how to be functioning citizens like they want to be in our communities. It all takes so much time. And right now, our staffing is down. For the last 10 years, we've been down about 12.5% of our staff. So we've got positions that have been allocated to us that are not being funded. So we just can't even meet our statutory and constitutional obligations and pay the kind of attention to the people that need to be paid to give them the respect to create our democracy with a small d like we want to without the people to do it. So thank you, Mr. Lashway, for that concern. We really do need support for our courts. And I know it's not something like asking for affordable housing to be built or facilities for the mentally ill to be built, but there are things that we can do to help those people if we can just have the small resources that we're asking for. We want to be part of that effort, and we think it's important.
Thank you. We're running out of time. I do want to tell you that next week we have University of Oregon President Michael Schill. Before he was president of the university, he was dean of law schools and a teacher of property. And for the lawyers in the room, I saw him last night and got him to promise not to talk about the rule against perpetuities. We have a lot of programs coming up in January, a lot of great programs. Check our website at cityclubofeugene.org. We do have two special programs. On the 18th with Springfield, at Springfield, a program on Oregon taxes with former legislators Dave Hunt, Vicki Berger, and Phil Barnhart. On January 22nd at the Ford Alumni Center at 1 o'clock, Governor Kate Brown will be addressing a special session of the City Club. So keep in touch, folks. We have a lot of programs for you this month, and we appreciate your support here. And let's give a big round of applause to Chief Justice Martha Walters and Judge Suzanne Chanty.